I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Dave and DeGenevieve. A new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Dave, when I saw the shooting of two sheriff's deputies in Salt Lake County in the face, both shot in the face on Saturday, I just, my heart sank. I thought the worst would happen, that we would be talking about two dead deputies today. Thankfully, both of them survived.
Yes, and learning that the one that was shot in the cheek was released not long after being shot in the face. An incredible and terrifying story. It's 9:07. It's time for the launch.
Sequence engaged.
Here are three things Debbie wants you to know.
Countdown. Three.
You got to be right here at 10:20 this morning. That's when Utah Governor Spencer Cox is calling the show. There's new reports out saying that we should expect a big drop in the Johnson & Johnson vaccine shipments. And I think this is a big oh no. Oh no. We knew we'd see shortage this week from vaccine shipment news that Dave and I broke last week about Johnson & Johnson. But Dave, I'm really worried this new information could spell some big delays in COVID-19 vaccine appointments for a lot of folks who don't have their vaccine shots yet. We're going to ask the gov about that.
And I'm not so sure it's a big oh no, maybe a little oh no. The most vulnerable have been vaccinated, 85% of people 70 and over. That's great news. I want to know, though, if it's time to adapt a little bit. Britain, for example, expected to hit herd immunity today. That's because they decided to forego those second doses. They just turned all those second doses into first doses, gave out millions more, and now they're looking at herd immunity. Any chance we do that?
Countdown.
Well, I want to know, when will we have a decision from President Biden about Bears Ears and Grand Staircase National Monuments? In Utah, of course. Utah Representative Chris Stewart met with Interior Secretary Deb Haaland as she toured both sites this weekend. And he's going to call us at 10:35 this morning. Representative Chris Stewart calling us live. We're hoping to squeeze an answer out of him.
Yeah, this feels very Goldilocks to me. The first national monument was too big. The next one was too small. So, will Secretary Haaland get it just right? More importantly, can we just end this yo-yo back and forth?
Launch countdown one.
Out of the gates this morning, the rap sheet of the man police say shot two Salt Lake County deputy sheriffs in their faces is so long, Dave, I cannot believe he was not behind bars. His last act of violence, police say he tried to kill those two law enforcement officers when they came across him outside, oddly enough, the Salt Lake County Jail on Saturday. Sheriff Rosie Rivera calling the show with an update on how our officers are doing in 10 minutes.
The fact that these two deputies are even alive is a miracle. Both shot in the face, both survived. Miraculous. Could it have been avoided?
Dave and Janovic.
The launch.
Commence.
The launch is brought to you by Mountain America Credit Union.
Utah's top local story. Special coverage with Dave and Janovic.
The suspect in Saturday's shooting of those two deputies is so long, it begs this question. Why was he not behind bars? It seems from our research here this morning that he got bottomless second chances from the criminal justice system. Dave, his criminal history runs so deep. I did not have time to print it all out before the show, but I'm going to show it to you right here, Dave. Look at me through FaceTime. Look at this. This is a book. This is a novel.
It looks like a ream of paper.
It is a ream of paper.
It's incredible. We're lucky that we're not talking about two dead law enforcement officers today. One lost his eye. The other took a bullet to the cheek. Shot in the face, both of them. We don't know the motive behind the shooting, but we're about to learn about the life the suspect led.
I dove into the court records this morning for the suspect in this case. He was killed. And what stood out to me in his rap sheet when I dove through those court records, Dave, was that his trouble began a dozen years ago. This is the first thing that stood out to me. He was not new to the criminal justice system. We learned from the court cases that he liked cars. The only problem was he liked other people's cars and he liked breaking into them. He had a number of charges related to vehicle burglaries. He was also into the drug scene. At one point, caught selling cocaine to an undercover officer near the homeless shelter in Salt Lake City.
That makes him a drug dealer, right? If you're selling cocaine to undercover police officers. And oftentimes when we're looking through these charges, and we do this so often, we see these charges and we think, oh, maybe it's not that bad. Well, so often the charges and what's actually convicted and what the plea deal is much different than what actually happened.
His rap sheet, Dave, for drugs is so long, though, we'd be sitting here all day if we're reading through all of them. I was shocked. I was shocked when I saw the rap sheet just for drugs alone. I thought, how in the world was the system protecting him if he was out on the streets? Well, he's dead now. The system isn't only designed to say to protect the public, to protect our law enforcement. The system has also got to be designed and set up to protect the criminals. He was also caught lying to cops. And he didn't observe city boundaries. Tooele, Salt Lake, Murray, this weekend in front of the Salt Lake County Jail where he allegedly shot those two deputies in the face. That's in South Salt Lake, so he didn't know any boundaries.
You posted a picture of his rap sheet. Yep. On Facebook. It was 16 pages long.
Oh, Dave, that was just the top sheet. These are all stapled together. I have a ream of, practically a ream of paper here, and I didn't have time to print everything out. What else I noticed in his rap sheet? Judges gave him lots of breaks. You surprised? I'm not. This is how the system's been working for years. And for example, here's one example. In 2013, he faced 11 counts of vehicle burglaries. He was allowed to plead guilty to three. And not guilty to a whole list of other crimes in that same case, which I think would have sent him away to do more time. How did he thank the judges? Not showing up to court, violating terms of his probation. Just one example I found, not completing a treatment program 8 years ago. Dave, these are just one example at a time. There's a list of examples in these cases.
And I think as we were talking about this and you were unfolding and uncovering all of these charges, I'm just scratching my head. I'm thinking, how does a criminal career, and that's what it is at this point, this criminal career slip through the system for so many years?
Well, it gets even worse. Here's what else I noticed when I was doing some digging this morning. The trail that led up to the shooting on Saturday, it seems to have begun 3 years ago with drug charges. In this case, he violates his probation, I think within a short time of his sentence from what I read. And then he gets his cash-only warrant for $250,000, Dave, ordered by the judge, $250,000. That's a pretty serious situation if the judge orders a cash-only bail for $250,000. Then a few months ago, he's ordered to a halfway house in Salt Lake City. Apparently, he leaves. If we've been reporting he's homeless, I don't think he's homeless. He had a place to stay. It was at that halfway house. He just chose to walk away. Now, it's been reported that parole probation agents were out looking for him, Dave. Well, ironically, he was outside the Salt Lake County Jail.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's top local story, special coverage with Dave and Dujanovic.
Salt Lake County Sheriff Rosie Rivera visibly shaken this weekend, and for very, very good reason. Dave, she could have lost two deputy sheriffs with the flash of gunfire. Those two were patrolling the grounds around the county jail, which is at about 3300, 3400 South and 900 West in South Salt Lake, when they came across a man. Apparently just pulled out a gun, shot both deputies in the face. The suspect is dead, Dave.
A shocking, horrifying story. We have Sheriff Rivera on the line with us right now. Sheriff Rosie, can you just tell us, how are you deputies doing this morning?
Well, you know, they have a long road to recovery, but I just really, glad that they are alive, and we're working with them and their families to make sure that they have everything that they need for now, but it will be a long road to get over this.
During the break, Sheriff Rivera, Dave asked me an excellent question, and I'll just ask it to you. What now happens to those two deputies in terms of their career, particularly the deputy who lost his eye in the shooting?
Well, we have processes in place, you know, and this occurred while they were on duty, so we'll work with our human resources. Law enforcement is really good about taking care of their own, so we'll make sure that they're very well taken care of. Our biggest concern right now is their recovery, and we can focus on the rest later, but we want to just make sure that they're doing well now and set for a recovery.
Did the deputies fire at the suspect, or did he die by suicide? Do we know that?
Well, all of that is still under investigation, but it is, what we did release over on Saturday was that there was some type of gunfire exchange, but all of it is still under investigation, so I really can't comment on the investigation piece.
Any idea, though, when that exchange happened? Were the officers able to return fire after they were shot, or were they able to fire beforehand?
Yeah, I really don't know that. Like I said, the investigation will give us more information once it's completed. And the protocol team is working really hard on getting that all resolved.
Salt Lake County Sheriff Rosie Rivera on the line live with us right now, talking about the shooting of two of her deputies in the face on Saturday. One lost an eye. The other was shot in the cheek. And Sheriff, we've been going over the very long rap sheet as I dove into the criminal history of the man accused of firing at those deputies. Of course, he was killed on Saturday. It seemed as though in his last act of violence, which was against these two officers, there was a long road that led up to him, that dated back some 3 years regarding drug charges. And then before that, he had a number of charges regarding like vehicle burglaries, lying to police, drug distribution or attempted drug distribution. At some point, did the court system or the criminal justice system let your two deputies down along the way?
Well, you know, I'll have to take a real good look at that. That part of the investigation is looking at how this occurred and what led up to it, and we'll be doing that. I think it's premature to put the blame on anyone at this point, but we surely will be looking at those things. I can tell you, though, when an individual is involved in drugs, if we can do some early interventions before it gets too far, that help is helpful. But once they start dealing drugs, it's really hard. And at those times, incarceration may be better. I just don't know in this particular case what led up to it. And, you know, we'll be taking a look at it for sure.
It appears that this suspect had walked away from a halfway house. Can you give our listeners a little insight to what a halfway house is and what role it plays?
Well, that is probably for the halfway house to comment on. And, you know, if he was on APMP, it's probably better for them to comment, because I'm not sure on what situation he was in at the time. I do know that he had been booked in our jail multiple times, but it really is up to the courts and their decision making who gets released from our jail.
Right. By all accounts, and looking at his rap sheet, Sheriff, he had no right at all to have a gun. I'm sure this is still part of the ongoing investigation as to how he got a gun. But I know from our research here at KSL that it's not unusual for drug dealers or those involved in the drug world to trade guns for drugs. Can you comment at all, give us any insight at how he got his hands on that gun?
Yeah, I don't know that right now. I will know that after the investigation. Typically, in some of these types of cases, they're stolen guns. I'm sure the protocol team will confirm where the gun came from and whether or not it was stolen. An individual with that kind of criminal history could not buy a gun legally. So, you know, one thing I'd like to tell our community, if you own guns, lock them up. Because these guys will go out and they will steal your guns. You know, they're struggling drug addiction, and they'll do anything to get that drug.
Sheriff Rosie Rivera, we're so grateful that your deputies are alive in really a shocking turn of events that it wasn't much worse. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to updates as soon as you get them.
Thank you, Sheriff. Pass along our best wishes for a speedy recovery to both of your deputies. This has just been a very tragic weekend. We're very, very fortunate that both of those deputies survived. They were patrolling the grounds around the Salt Lake County Jail, also the Sheriff's Office building that is the office to, you know, detectives and deputies and officers and is there as well. So they were, you know, patrolling the outer perimeter, the outside of that area, Dave, when they came across this man. And I'm going to speculate here. I'm sure in the moment they thought whatever behavior was unusual was, you know, then they felt the need to approach him and figure out what was going on. But the fact that they had this gun drawn on them and they were shot at and in the face, I think you said it best earlier, it is a miracle. But I also feel as though this is an opportunity for the criminal justice system to review this case in depth and figure out what went wrong, because we have a suspect, not only two deputies, one who lost an eye, but we have a suspect who's dead, who has a very long and storied history of not only crime, but also of drugs, Dave, of drugs.
And there's no reason these deputies should be alive, quite frankly. One shot in the cheek, one shot in the eye. There's no reason they should be alive today. We should be mourning two deputies and their deaths. The fact that they're alive is one of the great blessings of the weekend. I'm so grateful. And like the sheriff said, their road to recovery is going to be very, very long, not just physical, but emotional as well.
Well, I just can't even imagine that as we're looking over this rap sheet here, Dave, that APMP, Adult Probation Parole, has got to sit down and review it. The judges have got to sit down and review what went wrong. You know, anybody who's encountered him should be at the table to talk about this case. This should be a case of, you know, just should be thoroughly reviewed as to what happened and what did go wrong with this suspect.
And I want to know what happened with the halfway house.
Yes.
This is a part of the criminal justice system that happens often, where inmates are released to a halfway house and they just walk away and they leave and it's difficult to track them. There's something going on, and I think we need to dive into that.
Utah's top local story, special coverage with Dave and Dujanovic.
I think this is an outrage. The suspect in Saturday's shooting of two Salt Lake County sheriff's deputies, both shot in the face, has such a long history of crime. I couldn't believe how long his rap sheet was, Dave, when I researched the court records. And it really begs the question, why was he not behind bars? How many chances did this man get? I think this is another example of what I've called over through the years Utah's criminal injustice system. I mean, here's just a sample. Vehicle burglaries, drugs, lying to police. I could sit here for an hour and not go through this rap sheet I'm holding in my hand.
You started printing it out. You took a picture. You put it on Facebook. I saw 16 pages.
Those are stapled.
And you said, that's just the beginning.
That's just the top page you saw. What you couldn't see on Facebook was all the pages I had stapled behind. And it is so incredibly long. It's just this winding situation, this in court, out of court, in court, before a judge, now another warrant. Now he walks away from a halfway house. And now, let me just read to you, Dave. Let me just read before we get to our live interview with the Fraternal Order of Police. I found court cases for this suspect who is deceased back to 2009, again in 2012. 2013, 2017. I think there was one in 2015, 2018, 2019. You know what that says to me? There's a really big revolving door going at the courthouse, or at the parole office, for Joshua Michael Johnson, who's now dead. So the system didn't protect him either.
And invariably, when you read those charges and you read what he's been convicted of, it's almost always worse than it appears.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's been some sort of plea deal. It's been pled down to a lesser charge. That's almost invariably what has happened. So if it's bad on paper, it's even worse in real life.
Brent Jex is the president of the Fraternal Order of Police. Good morning, Brent.
Good morning, Deb.
This is just sickening. It is just wrong on so many levels. How do we fix it?
Well, I think on a couple of levels, we've got to start by focusing on removing predators from society. You know, we have this inherent nature in us here in this state, and it's not a bad one. But we're a society of forgiveness. We're a society of trying to make things right. But people need to stop looking at this as simple drug possession. Look at the number of cases, the robbery cases, the assault cases that are in his rap sheet.
Yep.
This guy, the system failed him. You know, like you said earlier, the system failed him. It failed our two brothers that are luckily recovering. It could have been so much worse for them. But we've got to start tackling this seriously.
I look at these pages. And pages and pages and pages of charges. How frustrating is it for police officers that arrest for a certain charge and then they see it get systematically pled down to a lesser charge, lesser charge, lesser charge?
It can be frustrating at times. There are some, we do have a lot of prosecutors that seek the officer's input on it. Our courts are completely overwhelmed. The system's overwhelmed. The correction system's overwhelmed. The halfway houses are overwhelmed. And just as a mere, logistics of it, the problem isn't necessarily the pleading down of cases, because I think in some ways, if there's an appropriate resolution, and the offenders wanting to go to treatment, I think we can all agree that a treated offender is better than a jailed offender. But what we're seeing in this case is an offender that treatment didn't work. It hasn't worked in the last 13 years. And so why he's in a halfway house for treatment, again, is kind of what's mind-boggling. And we go back to issues of, I've been fielding questions over the weekend about JRI and its role. And bottom line is that if we would just look at removing predators from society, there's a difference between a predator and the difference between somebody that makes a mistake. People that make a mistake, there are consequences and things like that. But we've got to do a better job systematically of putting those predators in timeout, whether it's jail or prison, locking them away to where they can't harm society and where they can't harm themselves, and try and get them appropriate correctionable behavior before giving him another shot.
Is it difficult to determine who the is it difficult to determine who the predators are?
No, I think after your fourth or fifth arrest for just non-possession stuff, I think that starts to give a pretty big indication that you are preying on society. And what I mean by preying on society is that you're breaking into people's cars, you're breaking into people's homes to steal stuff to get drug money. You are committing robberies, you're committing assaults. It's a progression of the criminal activity. He didn't start out major in 2008 and then just end up with parking violations in 2019. His went the other way. And so I don't know that there's a clear-cut, one-page solution for this, but I think it's something that our legislature needs to take seriously. They need to take it as seriously, if not more so, than they do education.
Well, Brent Jex is the president of the Fraternal Order of Police. You made reference to JRI, which happened in about 2015, where you had justice reform. It was an initiative that was worked on by Utah lawmakers, and we can go into more detail on that in the days ahead. But Brent, I want to get back to this particular case because I know the sheriff did not want to put any blame on anybody, but I look at how many breaks the judges gave this individual who's now accused of shooting two police officers in the face along the way. And I don't understand why one of these judges did not just put this man in jail for, when you look at 2009, 2012, 2013, 2015, 2017, 2018, 2019, these are the years he committed crime. So how much time did he do? He did the crime, but he didn't seem to do that much time.
No, it seemed to be a revolving door of second chances, and that's what's got to change. And I know we have a lot of good, honorable judges that I truly believe mean well, but there comes a point in time when we've got to say enough is enough. How many more police officers have to get shot? How many more victims in society of violent crime, do we see on the front pages? And for every guy that we're talking about now, for every Mr. Johnson that we're talking about, how many hundreds more are out there? This is a situation that, Saturday was gut-wrenching. It was a hard day until learning that they were, out of the woods. And how many more days like that are we going to go through as a society before we finally wake up and realize that there are certain people that cannot function out in society, no matter how much we want them to, no matter how much we want them to succeed? We've got to start making those hard decisions of putting them away and starting to prioritize what's important to us and what's not. Because right now, it does not feel like public safety is the priority.
Brent Jex, thank you so much for joining us. The president of the Fraternal Order of Police. A shocking story, an amazing story, a miraculous story that these two officers, these two deputies, were shot in the face and survived. But make no mistake, they will be dealing with these injuries, both physical and psychological, for the rest of their lives.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.